Welcome to University Matters on Campus FM. I'm Patricia Camilleri. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research, their international networks, their aims and plans for the future. I shall also be hearing from staff and students about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. This is the program that keeps you informed about what's happening on campus. I'm very pleased to have with me today on University Matters, Dr. Ernest Kakia. Just a few words about my guest. He currently holds the post of Dean of the Faculty of Information and Communication Technology and is head of the Computer Science Department here at the university. He read for a bachelor, master's and doctorate degrees in computing, computer engineering and software engineering from the National Technical University of Ukraine and the University of Sheffield in UK. Dr. Kakia has worked in various electronics and ICT companies and private educational establishments before taking up a lecturing post at the University of Malta, where he has been since 1994. Dr. Kakia is involved in various EU projects and is currently project leader managing ERDF 017, entitled Construction, Finishing and Equipping of ICT Faculty Building, a project valued at over 17 million euro. And we'll talk quite a bit about that later on. He's responsible for the software engineering stream in both undergraduate and postgraduate levels in the current BSc Honours in ICT degree program here at the university. I'd like to welcome you,
Thank you. To the
studio, and I look forward to hearing about ICT, which of course is such a topical subject and of interest to really just about everyone.
Yes.
In general, perhaps just as an initial question, obviously today you have faculty of ICT here at the university. This has been going now for some years as a faculty.
2007, June of 2007.
And I remember when that was set up.
Yes.
But of course, ICT has a past that goes further back than that here at the university.
Yes, of
perhaps
course.
You could sort of outline the genesis.
Well, if one had to trace back the history of ICT, one simply has to look at the acronym itself, which is ICT. Before ICT, people used to speak a lot about IT. You might remember that, which was more the science of the way we manage information and the technology behind that. But as time progressed, one could see that you could not really separate the concepts of technology and the use of technology from the way it is communicated. Even more with the advent of the mobile technologies and the pervasive influence that these technologies have in everyday life, where before a mobile phone used to be something of a privilege, now it is something of a necessity, and you can't even imagine living without a mobile phone. We now talk about a tablet, which is not something that you swallow, but it's something that is that sits somewhere in between a phone and a computer and a laptop. We see these propping up everywhere. People find their lives organized around these devices, whatever they are, as big or small as they are. You go on an aeroplane and there's ICT. You go on a hospital, there's ICT. And there's not IT, there's ICT because everything is communicated. Information is whizzing around. People are talking to each other. Programs are talking to each other. Your organization is based on various things communicating with each other. So now we have got a new field of science, because after all this is a science. There can be no mention of ICT without a scientific foundation to it, and we're talking about a scientific kind of approach towards the creation of aids for life.
And the students that you have, they are interested obviously in ICT.
Yes.
They have to have a science background. Where are these students coming from, and what is there a good gender mix as well?
Let's start with the first part of the question. Where do they originate from? They originate mostly from the field of science, as I already said. So we find people in ICT who are usually, generally, have got a flair for mathematics, have got a formal way of looking at and dissecting problems and coming to solutions. They have a pragmatic approach to the way things can be built. Gender-wise, I would have liked it to be more of a balanced field of play, but unfortunately it is not. It's still predominantly a male-oriented area, although in all due respect, I don't see why it should be, because it has nothing to do with physical work or even speaking about physical work, but it's mostly to do with patterns of thought. So I do not see why it isn't. I think maybe it is more to do with the traditional approach, even from school, as which are the traditional tracks that should be taken up by this or that gender, you know. So a lawyer can be a woman and is expected also to be a woman or a man. A doctor is the same thing, and all of the traditional ones. But ICT is still something considered
the male bulwark,
technical. Mm-hmm. So the word technical sort of still in many minds excludes the female gender, which is an unfortunate aspect.
Yes, it always surprised me actually that engineering, I can sort of imagine that yes, it has remained a bit of a male bulwark. Although we have about 20%, I think, women now in engineering,
yes. And it's on the increase, I believe.
Uh-huh. So. But I would have thought in ICT there wasn't that so much that kind of prejudice, if you like, against sort of females going into it. I'm sure that the penny will drop very soon that this is a perfect area for women to get into. You were mentioning the various branches. I know that you have five departments.
That's right.
Perhaps we can just sort of name them, just sort of so that people get an idea of what there is available.
Yes, of course. The first one is Communications and Computer Engineering, which deals with the networking, hardware, and telecommunications aspects of ICT, and obviously all the underlying scientific needs and fundamentals that need to be tackled to be able to come up with solutions and understand what's going on within that area. Then we have got the computer information systems. This is a department which is more traditionally rooted in what was before called IT, and it deals with anything that has to do with management of information. Again, a scientific approach to the management of information is a necessity if efficient management is going to happen, or else it just becomes a person with a hobby, in other words. Then we have got computer science, which is the department that I head. Computer science is, I would say, the more formal, the more math-oriented, and hence the more fundamental of all the disciplines. It deals with the creation, communication, verification of what are known as algorithms, and that means mathematical sequences of actions represented in all forms of paradigms and all forms of ways to which can be then applied to solve a particular problem. There's a lot that can be said here, obviously. I'm not going to say any more. Then we come to intelligent computer systems, which formerly was called the Department of AI, Artificial Intelligence, now has changed its the name. This deals with adaptive systems, intelligence in computing, and that means it's the value added to the computing factor. If in the science of computing we look at the algorithms and the way we approach, the way we build the solutions, here we are looking at the way we can impregnate these solutions with intelligence in a basic sense, not in the sense of human intelligence yet, although I assume that that's what we're working towards at the end of the day. So we're looking at adaptive systems, we are looking at systems that can form, mutate according to the needs of the environment in which they work, systems that learn from the environments, that go out there and learn from the environments. That's the sort of thing we're talking about. And then we have the Department of Micro and Nano Electronics. This is a department that in ICT is crucial, because most of the interaction with the real world, that all the solutions we speak about in ICT, all of the interactions happen through techniques and through devices, which are then built, implemented on a micro or a nano electronic level. So we have a phone, just to give you an example, and the phone is to calculate your acceleration. If if there isn't the technology to actually build the sensor that actually handles the calculation in the right way, handles the readings in the right way, then the calculations cannot happen. Right? So everything is interlinked. All of the departments form part of this huge web, which we call ICT.
This nanoelectronics has always blown my mind. Whenever anybody's spoken to me about it, it's just sort of somehow it's like sort of quantum mechanics, something you read about, but you can't actually grasp. Well, I can't, obviously, as I'm not.
Strangely enough, there is a tenuous link, because the smaller the distances of the technology which you have, the more into play quantum physics and quantum mechanics maybe start to even impinge upon it a little bit, but that's really not
very
not
exciting.
The case. There's no link.
Well, about the we're talking about the students before. I know that you have physically within the departments of your faculty, there are about 400, something like 400, 500, but
yes,
you've got other students who, because you feed other areas of the university, don't you? So the community of students, in fact, if you had to add them all up, is much larger than 400.
Of course, this is witness of the fact that ICT is something that is acknowledged by other disciplines. People understand that any human endeavor which you do has got to be amplified, has got to be made efficient through the use of ICT. Therefore, obviously, we service a huge number of faculty. One mentions Faculty of Faculty of Education, Faculty of Science. I mean, it looks at the Faculty of the Institute of Linguistics and a number of others, Faculty of Economics and Management and Accountancy. And that brings, if one had to calculate, it brings around 2,000 students who actually are enrolled taking a number of courses from the Faculty of ICT from other faculties. Mm-hmm. And this puts a burden on the faculty. It puts a burden on the faculty from a logistic point of view, from a timetabling point of view, a burden also from a point of view of lecturing, because you get mixed audiences, some with not the same background as others. So what goes for
difficult
one
to know where to pitch.
For the other? Mm-hmm. Exactly. But I think we are handling a certain degree. Obviously, it would be nice to have more members of staff to see the faculty growing, but we are what we are.
We're now going to take a very short break. Welcome back to University Matters. Well, talking about growth, perhaps that can bring us neatly on to the project which you're working on now, which is financially a very expensive yes, project by University of Malta standards, the new ICT building. So perhaps you could tell us a bit about it, how it sort of came to be, where it's going to be, and how big it's grown physically so far.
As I had already mentioned earlier, there is a demand for ICT. Unfortunately, the faculty was still new. It still is relatively new. It was composed of a number of departments which were originally split over two existing faculties, the Faculty of Engineering and the Faculty of Science. And premises were not really available for growth. We were increasing our staff, we were increasing our student contingent, and we did not have where to grow. In fact, since I've been dean, it's been one big land reclaiming exercise since the very beginning. Reclaiming parts unbelievable next to public conveniences in the building, in corridors,
underneath staircases,
closing off areas which people would not have used as office space, but I have to make use of them. So obviously there was a dire need of grow or die, and the project was really something that we thought was a breath of fresh air. We would have liked this project to happen now, but unfortunately the latest prognoses are that it will probably come to completion towards November or December of next year. So there's a year ahead still of us. It's going to be a state-of-the-art building.
Well, I've seen the pictures, and they look pretty good.
Well, it's not what's on the outside; it's really what's on the inside. Sure. At the end of the day, I mean the systems, the cooling systems, and the heating system, the ventilation systems are all the latest that one can envisage. It is a building that's going to have a minimal footprint on the environment. The carbon emissions are going to be controlled. It's going to be built with innovative materials such as special glass with a reflective index appropriate for the climate that we have here on the island. Therefore, hopefully, again, I am not the architect, so I cannot comment on the technicalities, but hopefully we're going to end up with a building that looks very nice and is also going to be very economical to run and comfortable to live in, which is the most important thing. It's going to be spread over two main blocks, connected in the middle with a lift and other small rooms. It's being built on the side of the ring road that overlooks the yacht marina.
In fact, you can see it coming up now.
Not a lot of it can be seen because a lot of it is going to be underground. It's being built on a slope, on quite a steep slope. So part of it is above the ground and part of it is underground.
The advantage of being in that terrain is that you can sort of cover some of it.
And we also had a limit as to how high we could build. We could build the building because it would have then blocked the view of other buildings within the university, and we simply couldn't do that. So we left it as low as possible. It will have the first underground parking area in all of the university, I believe. So at least members of staff working in the building will be able to free more space on the outside for other members of staff to be able to park.
Starting from the bottom, you're going to have this car park, obviously.
Yes, there's going to be a car park.
And then minus...
Within the car park, there are going to be all the amenities as far as the generators go, UPSs go, uninterrupted power supplies, all the emergency needs and shafts in the building. Then we're going to go to the first floor, which is going to comprise mainly teaching spaces, auditoria, meeting rooms, and that sort of thing. The floor above that, which would be floor zero, because remember we started -2 and -1, now we're at zero. Floor zero would then be more classrooms, postgraduate areas, research areas, that's what we're looking at, other labs. And the topmost floor is level one. That's going to be other meeting spaces, offices, so on and so forth. But one must remember that our offices are not offices in the traditional sense, but they are also teaching space, tutorial spaces, because that's where staff also meet students and sometimes give even tutorials. So we don't classify them as offices.
I was looking at the aims in the project summary. I was briefing myself before this interview, and the first aim says the training of ICT professionals for national and international consumption at all the levels of the technological value chain.
Yes.
What does that mean, really, in simple terms?
The technological value chain is simply the market space. So in the market, in the ICT market, that's what I'm talking about now, there is need for employing people at various levels, from the lowest to the most strategic, as it were. The highest cannot work if the lowest aren't available, and the lowest doesn't know what to do if the ones at the top are not already in place. Now, we, as a university, pride ourselves in being able to produce graduates that would fit into most of the niches except the lower ones. We don't produce, say, for example, programmers, right? But we do produce developers, say, for example, or people who can manage projects, people who can look at a problem from a holistic point of view and come up with a solution that is going to be suitable now and in the future, or that is scalable, right? Rather than looking at the problem from in a very sort of focused way and say, look, I'm going to solve it now, but if something had to change in the market or in society in the future, the solution I'm proposing now doesn't make any more sense. That's not really what industry wants at the end of the day. So when I say the value-added bit or the value chain, it is what is the value in the market that this graduate can actually give by being employed in that particular position. We hope that this building is going to allow us to have a better output in this.
And the second aim mentions a means by which to garner interest in the field of ICT and foster the growth of healthy ICT research community, thus providing the right environment for effective collaboration between the University of Malta and other academic and commercial organisations. And here there is this, the two words that interest me, but you know, research and commercial
collaboration.
Really.
I would have guessed that. Well, research is the bread and butter of what we do at the end of the day. I mean, we do teach, yes, but teaching is, like I like to say, for a person who does research, teaching is the time when he relaxes. He actually does work, or she actually does work, when they're at the cutting edge, looking at what's being done and trying to move the boundaries a little bit ahead.
Especially in an industry like this where things change overnight.
Overnight, exactly. I mean, we're looking at changes in technology which now span not years, but months. There's a change every 2 months, for example, in ICT. So research for us is important, and to be able to carry out this research, you need the premises and you need the equipment. And this project actually addresses both the building and the equipping of the building. So we hope to have enough lab potential and enough community-wise people involved in research, the post-grad community, to be able then to interest industry, to be able to see, to be able to say, this is an entity which I can work with. They've got the potential, they've got the space, they've got the equipment, they've got the know-how, they've got the people to be able to help me with this particular issue. And we can start seeing different models of collaboration rather than simply, we give you a project and you help us out with this project. We can see now other ways of collaborating. We already have a memorandum of understanding, for example, signed between the University of Malta and HP, where HP is prepared to sponsor a whole lab within the new building, and we will integrate some of the material which they have, which we think is useful to our course, into the curriculum, or maybe even build separate courses based on this, on the technology which is offered by HP.
So this is a solid example.
It is a solid example.
Collaboration.
In the pipeline, we also have companies like IBM, although I'm still waiting for a reaction from IBM to happen yet, but they have shown great interest in the same kind of model also. And this model is not typical of the University of Malta. If you go to other universities, big and small, abroad, you find that this is the way they interact, one of the ways they interact with industry.
And I suppose the thing is that if you've got also industries wanting to come to Malta or firms wanting to come to Malta, they need to know that there's the personnel available for them that would be capable of working in their particular area.
Yes, because one must bear in mind that much of the industry, well, most of the industry that there is on the island, doesn't have an R&D branch. They don't do any research and development here on the island. It's mostly done at the parent company, if it's done at all. So when it comes to R&D, it's either they are looking for stuff off the shelf, or else they've got to come, they've got to make use of entities on the island that have got a good R&D infrastructure. Now, one of the main important things to have a good R&D infrastructure is to have the premises and the people to populate that those premises with the right ideas and the right receptiveness, I put it, to these kind of ideas. Now, having two labs and not even enough space to build offices is not really conducive to this sort of atmosphere.
Not really. Just a word about interdisciplinarity, which interests me very much.
Yes.
This building perhaps will also encourage this interdisciplinarity, this necessary contract.
I very much hope so, and that is one of the things I've been pushing all of the time. I firmly believe that the cutting edge, the movement ahead, happens not in the fundamentals of a science, but happens in actually this cross-cutting action, these new areas like ICT with banking or finance in general, ICT with forensics. It gives you a digital forensic aspect on what is happening. It's here that we can grow. It's not that we can grow. It's here that we should grow. And we find that the University of Malta, due to its classical structure, is not too hot, to use a common word, is not too hot on these cross-cutting courses, mainly because of lack of resources, of lack of time. People are very busy in their areas, so they don't have time to diversify or even partially diversify into different areas, due to the fact, maybe even of the fact of the case that everyone sees their area as a fortress. So, you know, I'm the domain here, and once I open my doors to and dilute, to use a very wrong word, my area, then I'm opening it up to other influences, and I'm not the boss anymore. I'm sorry to have to mention these things, but you do find these things. But I'm hoping that this, you know, having a bigger space, having more possibilities in terms of equipment, in terms of growing into new areas within this new space, will allow people to think in a different way.
So if I were a new company coming to Malta and I was sort of not quite sure whether I was coming or not, how would you sell, in inverted commas, the University of Malta to this new company?
I've thought about this over and over again because it's something that I've had to do in reality.
What would your pitch be?
My pitch cannot be look at what we do full stop, because if you look at the number of graduates that we produce and the number of graduates that are produced from other countries like, say, India or China, it's not that we're a drop in the ocean, we're probably an atom of a drop in the ocean, according to... however, when you come to look at the quality of the graduates, we compare very, very favorably. We're at the top when it comes to the quantities that are produced by other countries. So when I come to sell what we do, I sell where our graduates are currently working after they graduate, what they've been asked to do, the portfolios of their projects, the nature of the courses that we give, the reviews that we get from external examiners, which always say that the quality of what we do is way up there. Sometimes I must say a bit even too way up there. And I point to these things, and it usually works.
Well, we've come to the end of our time this morning. Thank you very, very much, Dr. Ernest Kakia, Dean of the Faculty of Information and Communication Technology here at the University, for telling us about the new ICT building, about ICT, and we look forward to seeing this new state-of-the-art building in the near future. Thank you for being with us on University Matters. You can listen to any of the previous interviews in this series on the Campus FM website. I hope you'll join us again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.